Now, the aftermath of the NATO war on Libya and the continued meddling by foreign powers is affecting countries in the region and beyond. Now, what will it take to restore peace in Libya?
Yes, so it will take dialogue, it will take selflessness, it will take putting the interest of Libya first, it will take less external involvement and interventions and disruptions. Now, Libya is what it is today because the rival government or the rival authorities are getting the backing of external forces. So first, the external forces must be urged to tone down or to back out a little and allow the Libyans to lead the road to peace. In fact, if Libyans do not lead it and others have to dictate to them, definitely the interest of Libya will not be paramount in any negotiation. But if Libyans lead it and they are going to consider their children, the future of their children, the future of their grandchildren and the next generations, then Libyans are going to take decisions that will benefit them. But currently, when some external actors are bankrolling rival factions, what is going to happen is that every part of negotiations is going to be dictated by external actors. So for Libya to actually have peace, external actors must be asked to back off and allow the Libyans to lead. I am not saying that external actors are not important. They can contribute, but their contribution should be behind what Libyans have decided.
Well, there you have it. Putting Libya first by Libyan politicians and an end to external meddling will end the crisis in Libya. That's the view of our guest today, Fidel Amake Owusu. He's an international relations and security analyst, and I would like to thank him for his incisive analysis. We now take a short break before our next topic on the crisis in Niger. Stay with us.
Niger crisis dividing Africans.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
The crisis in Niger continues to unfold after the July 26 coup that ousted a pro-West President Mohamed Bazoum and ushered in a military government led by Abdurrahman Chiani, who appears to have gained popularity among the masses due to his anti-France stance.
Niger's coup leader recently proposed a three-year transition of power after meeting a delegation of West African leaders. General Abdurrahman Chiani also warned that any attack by the member states of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, on his country would not be a walk in the park for those involved.
Neither the National Council for the Safeguard of the Homeland nor the people of Niger want war and remain open to dialogue, but let us be clear. If an attack were to be undertaken against us, it will not be the walk in the park some people seem to think.
For more on the ongoing situation in Niger, we have contacted Afolabi Joel Odigie. He's the Deputy Secretary General of the African Regional Organization of the International Trade Union Confederation in Lomé, Togo. Thanks for your time, sir, today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, ECOWAS member states, except those under military rule and Cape Verde, are ready to participate in the standby force to oust the military government in Niger. Now, there are reports that the African Union opposes military action against Niger. Neighboring countries such as Algeria and Chad also oppose any military invasion to oust the military leadership in Niger. Now, in your opinion, is the crisis in Niger leading to deep divisions within African countries, and who actually benefits from such divisions?
I think, and this might will be the fifth one, what we have seen going forward is that all of these is also contributing to the resurgence of the Pan-African aspiration, the resurgence of people, African mobilization around Pan-African consciousness, where the issues around our poverty, the issues around our dispossessions are now we now begin to interrogate them more stronger, deeper. And it's not so much analysis you could do that you did before you recognize who are the perpetrators of our suffering, of our miseries, that indeed the bulk of these persons are foreigners who strive in their plot because of some very few local accomplices. And that is the thing we see, and the people of Africa say enough is enough. Look at the case of Niger. So much wealth, uranium be at the center of it, but not only uranium, I bet you know. Why is they get nothing from uranium? A company like Areva will take more than 90% of the profit in the extraction of uranium, leaving the people poorer. And it doesn't end there. It degrades their environment and leave them with diseases that can, radioactive way that can cause them cancer. Thank you. Who strive?
While most people in Africa generally reject military coups, the recent military takeovers in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso appear to resonate with the masses. This is because the coup leaders have come out to reject neocolonialism perpetrated by former colonial powers, especially France. Some argue that these coups are clout that has a silver lining, as they have ignited Pan-Africanism and are promoting transition to real and popular democratic rule. Through the coups, like in the case of Niger, the military government has declared its resolve to stop the looting of the country's mineral resources, especially gold and uranium, by France.
What we have seen going forward is that all of these is also contributing to the resurgence of the Pan-African aspiration, the resurgence of people, African mobilization around Pan-African consciousness, where the issues around our poverty, the issues around our dispossessions are now we now begin to interrogate them more stronger, deeper. And it's not so much analysis you could do that you did before you recognize who are they.
The ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security, Abdel Fattah Moussa, has rejected accusations that ECOWAS was being manipulated by France or any other outside power in its decision on Niger. Now, he added that ECOWAS is a rules-based organization.
What they forget is that ECOWAS is a rules-based organization. We have our protocols, we have our norms, and we are ready to protect them. That's why the heads of state are saying, if push comes to shove, we are going into Niger with our own contingent owned equipment. We are going with our own resources and to make sure that we restore constitutional order.
Well, we've heard there what the ECOWAS security official has said. Now, what's your take on accusations that ECOWAS is being backed by France to invade Niger?
Yes, we can say that these accusations have a basis. They are not from the skies. They are not just manufactured to say this is more of a proxy war. And then some of us, personal opinion, I would say, why didn't we have a counterforce when there was a coup in Chad? Why didn't we have a counterforce when there was a coup in Guinea? Why didn't we have a counterforce when there was a coup in Burkina Faso? Of course, the Malian case, you could see the resistance, even from the French, until the Malian people said, no, that is the direction of travel they want.
Now, the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs says the country supports efforts by ECOWAS to end the military coup in Niger. The U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, also voiced support for efforts by the West African bloc on Niger. Now, why do Western powers, especially France and the U.S., favor a military intervention in Niger?
Niger is the last point where the African command of the U.S., which is based in Agadez and some point in the army, have their soldiers' foot on the ground. France, having been taken away from Mali, Burkina Faso, they are very strongly present in Niger. So it's more like for France, if you take them away from Niger, you are asking them to leave West Africa entirely, which is, for them, an option they don't want to consider.
While ECOWAS leaders back military invasion to remove the military government in Niger, many people in West Africa oppose a military option.
For me as a Nigerian, I want to believe that he should desist, he should resent, he should stay away, he should alter all decisions he has made towards this very unholy, you know, infiltration into another country.
Now, as we told you, our guest is a trade union representative. Now, can you tell us, what are the workers in the West African region saying regarding the impending invasion of Niger by these ECOWAS countries?
ECOWAS cannot say there is no diplomatic political options on the table that they can explore. The aggression to go to war speaks clearly to this appetite that is coming from outside. The African people have spoken, people in ECOWAS region have spoken, the workers have spoken to say, no, don't go on a military excursion that will probably not do anybody any good. Explore options that are on the table, diplomacy, political engagement, dialogue that we know will yield results. When you go to war, at the end, you still come back to the table to talk. So why not use talk to avoid war?
The CFA franc currency, used by West and Central African countries and linked to France, represents a form of monetary imperialism that stifles African countries' economic growth. This colonial-era currency keeps these African countries dependent on France.
Now, and my last question to you now, how will countries resisting French imperialism, such as Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, cope while still dependent on the French central bank?
This has been the style of France. France has never left Africa. What is clear to us is that France's existence seems to be tied. And I need the French to counter us on this. Their life seems to be tied to the perpetual dispossession, to the perpetual oppression, to the perpetual neocolonialist imperialist hold on African states, to the point of having their resources tied in their central bank, use their money to run their economies, including having to make them pay some other forms of taxes.
Well, there you have it. The existence of France is tied to the perpetual exploitation and looting of African resources. I'd like to thank our guest there, Afolabi Joel Odigie, for his incisive analysis today. Well, and that wraps it up for this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. Thanks a lot, and goodbye for now.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip: are there any philosophies behind the worship of Allah? Now, dear listeners, all Islamic laws and traditions of worship possess wisdom and philosophy. But first of all, we should know that in line with hundreds of Quranic verses, which are the words of Allah, and the traditions, the ahadith, which call on the people to reflect and think over not just Islamic divine laws, but over everything. And no school of thought has invited the people to think as much as Islam has done. Now, the second thing to keep in mind when answering this question regarding what is the wisdom behind these divine laws, one of the strong criticisms that the Holy Quran levels against the polytheists and the idol worshippers is their blind and unreasonable imitation of their ancestors, when their ancestors were committing wrong actions, yet still, without any thinking, without any reflection, the polytheists and idol worshippers were following and imitating their ancestors. Next, the Holy Quran itself has also mentioned the laws and commands of Allah many times, while also providing the reasons behind them. Also, the infallible imams from the household of the Holy Prophet, whom were divinely appointed, have also cited in their traditions the wisdom behind some of these divine laws and commands. And finally, in addition, with the advancement of human knowledge throughout the centuries, some of the secrets of these divine Islamic laws and religious commands are being unveiled on a daily basis. And with the passage of time, the grandeur and the image and the greatness of Islam will only be enhanced.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha
illallah. And now we will listen to Sheikh Zayd As-Salami, who will talk about today's topic.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. As human beings, we have many abilities. There are many things hidden within ourselves that are a part of our instinctive drive to always want to pursue a better life and try to achieve as much as we can in this short temporary life that we live in. When we look at our religions, we can see that the primary focus is for a person to be able to gain a higher level of quality life. Human beings are by nature social. We like to interact, we like to socialize, and of course this means that there are certain instructions that we need to follow, rules and regulations that we need to abide so we can have a better life. When we are interacting with other human beings, we need to make sure that there are certain etiquettes or standards that we need to observe. Looking at Islam, we can see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created us in the best form, but He has also brought us down to this lower realm in this worldly life that we live in, the dunya life that we are. Surah At-Tin, in the Holy Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in ayah number 4 and 5, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ ثُمَّ رَدَدْنَاهُ أَسْفَلَ السَّافِلِينَ. So when we look at this verse and when we look at other verses in the Holy Quran and traditions also from the Holy Prophet and from Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, we can see that this world is nothing but a stepping stone for the hereafter. Al-Dunya, as the Holy Prophet, praise and peace be upon him, has said, Al-Dunya mazra'atul akhirah. This world is a farm where here we are sowing what it is that we do as far as our deeds and our actions are concerned, and in the hereafter we will be seeing the fruits of all of our actions. Kama ta'ishun tamutun, as you live you will die. This is why, of course, when we as Muslims want to improve that level of lifestyle, when we want to gain further understanding of how it is that we need to acquire that closeness and proximity to the Almighty Creator, we need to follow that good, correct guideline of life so we can improve that quality of life. And this will not only bring us that felicity and happiness that we want, it will also give us inner peace, it will also enable us to become better citizens of this world. And that's why there's been a lot of concentration and focus given by our great scholars throughout time to teach us how we are to in living a good life.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, in view of all the points that we mentioned in the previous segment, it must be noted that if some secrets of the universe are revealed to us, we should not become arrogant and proud and haughty and expect to know the reason behind every single thing. Also, we should not go beyond the common access and fall prey to insinuations. Just as people entrust themselves to a physician and refrain from asking technical questions, they are also supposed to accept and abide by the laws of Allah, for Allah is the most kind, the most wise, the all-knowing, and the all-loving. Allah knows the future as well as the apparent and hidden effects of everything. And so, by trusting in Him, we trust in His laws. Furthermore, anyone who regards Allah as all-wise and believes that Allah's commands are based upon wisdom should not neglect a command merely because one does not know the reason behind it at this point in time. And finally, whenever we do not have a strong proof coming from the Holy Quran and the traditions, the ahadith, regarding the wisdom or the philosophy behind a law, it is better for us to keep silent rather than offering a series of justifications based upon our imagination and conjecture.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. Now, let's move on to some of the reasons and philosophies behind worship. Among the abundant hadith traditions regarding this very subject, let us quote some lines from one of the speeches of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, recorded in Nahj al-Balagha, the peak of eloquence. In Nahj al-Balagha, saying number 252, or in some versions saying 244, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Allah has laid down belief, iman, for the purification from polytheism. He has laid down prayer, salah, for the purification from vanity. He has laid down zakat, the Islamic taxes, for purification of the means of livelihood. And so Imam Ali tells us some of the wisdoms, the reasons, the philosophies behind iman, salah, and zakat. And dear friends, faith in Allah saves man from polytheistic thinking, from futile worship, and from impotent, weak, incapable sources of support. The prayer which seeks to worship the fountainhead of all greatness and pleads for help from the epicenter of power and grandeur purges man of pride. And so there are a very many divine Islamic laws which have been told to us what their philosophy, their wisdom, and their reason is, all we have to do is go and find out. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the program of For a Better Life. I am B. Tetra Service. And in this episode, again, we're going to talk about something really controversial and important for having a better life. We're here again. A new story, a new lesson that we can learn many things from this. So, as you know, we have all some inner kind of feelings about knowing more and more about world, and being informed about and know the world is a kind of root deep in our souls. So for having a better life, we have to go and seek these feelings and these emotions more and more in order to have a developed soul and have more knowledge to be a better creature in this world. You know, we all want to know in truth, did this elevated heaven, with its beautiful stars, its extensive earth, with its heart-rendering views, these various creatures, beautiful birds, various kinds of fish, the seas, the flowers, the blossoms, plants, abundant trees, you know, whose tops reach towards the heavens, did all of these things come into being of their own free will, or were all these wonderful forms painted by an expert? A powerful painter. The answer to these questions is a path, is a way that can lead us to a higher level of being. Beyond all of these, the first question which comes to mind to all of us is, where did we come from? Where are we? Where are we going? If we know the answer to these three questions, how happy will we be? That is, if we know where our life began and where it will finally end, and what duties we have now, our searching spirit tells us, you must not sit quietly until the answers come. So, it often happens that in an automobile accident, a person is injured and becomes unconscious, and for his treatment, they take him to hospital. When his condition has improved a bit, and when he awakens, the first thing which he asks of those around him is, where am I? Why did you bring me here? When can I leave here? All of these questions show that a person cannot remain indifferent and not ask these questions. Thus, the first thing which sends us looking for God and understanding of the creation of the world of existence existence is a very thirsty spirit of search. So we get here, we come to understand that there is a thirsty spirit of search in everybody's soul that asks many questions, and we have to go for the answers of these questions. And this is one of the most important ways for a better life. So let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back. For a better life, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. Here we are. We're discussing actually the reasons why we have to seek knowledge of the creation of the earth, existence of God, and the existence of ourselves, the self-knowledge, which is the first step should be taken in order to have a better life. And another reason for actually seeking knowledge of this world creation is the sense of thankfulness. Pretend that you've been invited to a very important affair and all means of convenience have been provided for you, but because you've been invited through your brother, you don't know the host well. The first thing you will want to do when you enter the gathering is to find a host to thank him. When we look at this widespread created world and the multiple blessings which have been provided for us, eyes which see, ears which hear, sufficient intelligence, various physical and psychological abilities, various means for living and for earning our livelihood, we automatically begin to think about trying to know He who has given us all these blessings. And even though He doesn't need our thanks, we still thank Him. And until we do this, we are unhappy with ourselves and feel we haven't done a duty. This is another reason why we begin to search to come to know God. So this feeling, this urge that we think we need to have to be thankful about all the blessings we have is one of the reasons why we have to seek the knowledge about these worlds, this creation, ourselves, and the Creator. Another thing which I want to mention here is the bond between things to our benefit and things to our harm one example which I want to give you. So let's keep everything here and go for a short break. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. Your love is all I need. It's all I need. Your love is all I need. It's all I need. Your love is all I need.
Welcome back, IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to For a Better Life. I'm here again. As you'll remember, we were discussing the reasons why we have to seek and search for knowledge about this creation, this beautiful and perfect creation of everything, and the Creator itself. And I gave you two reasons up to here. The first one was that everybody has a thirsty spirit of search. And the second one was the sense of thankfulness, that we feel the urge to be thankful when we see all these blessings. Let's talk about the third and the last cause of just having this feeling of urge to go for this knowledge here. The last one, as I told you, is the bond between things to our benefit and things to our harm. That I will give you an example. Pretend that we're going on a journey and we reach a crossroad in which there is a great deal of commotion. Everyone warns us not to stop at this crossroad because there is a great danger there. So each group invites us to go its way. One group says, the best way is go east. Another says, go west, it is the best road. The third group invites us to a road or a way which is between the other two, saying, this is the only way of saving yourself from danger and reaching your home safely. This is the way that will give you happiness and security and be a place of refuge for you. Would we allow ourselves to choose a way without study? Will our mind allow us to stop there and not choose any way? Clearly not. We're all human beings and we have a nature in common, which actually we name it as fitrat in Islamic actually dictionary. So rather our mind and our wisdom tells us to begin immediately to study and research, to listen to the words of each group carefully and accept whichever way has the most correct signs, speaks the truth and has convincing reasons for taking that way. Having assured ourselves of the right way, we take it and move forward. This is the road of life, actually. So, in life in this world, also, we have such a condition. Different religions and schools of thought invite us to take their way, but as our fate, our fortune and misfortune, our progress and backwardness depends upon our study and making the best choice, we are obliged to think about this and prevent ourselves from falling into misfortune, corruption, and difficulties. This is yet another reason which invites us to search for the Creator of the world. And also, I want to end this episode with this verse of Holy Quran, which says, so give good tidings to my servants, those who listen to the sayings and follow the best of it. It was all the time we had for today's episode. Thank you for listening to me. I wish it was helpful for all of you. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Limelight. New data shows that Eurozone manufacturing and services have slumped to its lowest level since 2020. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, data compiled by S&P Global revealed recently business activity in the Eurozone took another hit in August as the bloc's economic downturn extended from the manufacturing to the services sector. HCOB's Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, for the bloc, a measure reflecting manufacturing and services activity, slumped to its lowest level since November 2020 to 47 from 48.6 in July. The reading was well below the 50 mark separating growth from contraction and lower than economic expectation of 48.5. Both manufacturing and services reported falling output and new orders. Activity in the EU's key services industry slumped for the first time this year and plunged to a 30-month low, and that is according to new data. Cyrus Dola Rubia, chief economist at Hamburg Commercial Bank, said the service sector of the Eurozone is unfortunately showing signs of turning down to match the poor performance of manufacturing. Output in the Eurozone has been shrinking for three consecutive months, led by a fifth successive monthly decline in manufacturing. Excluding the pandemic, the drop in new business was the steepest since October 2012. New orders for goods continued to fall at one of the sharpest rates since the global financial crisis, accompanied by a second month of deteriorating demand for services, S&P said. Concerns are mounting that GDP in the euro area will be falling in the third quarter as the bloc's economy slipped deeper into decline in August. Bert Collin, senior economist at ING, said another weak PMI for the Eurozone confirms a sluggish economy with recession as a downside risk. Inflation pressures for services remain stubborn as wage pressures continue to be a concern. Hiring nearly stalled in the bloc as companies grew reluctant to expand capacity in the face of deteriorating demand and gloomier prospects for the year ahead, the report said. The website of IntelliNews also noted Europe's latest economic indicators paint an increasingly black picture for the Eurozone outlook, as data released on August 24th indicates the continued weakening of activity and suggests a recession in the second half of this year, Oxford Economics said in a note. Oxford Economics said, economic indicators released this week suggest activity in the Eurozone continues to weaken. The August Eurozone PMI fell to its lowest level in 3 years, with Germany once again faring the worst among European economies, adding, with no real activity data yet available for the third quarter, we are still reliant on surveys to gauge the extent of the slowdown. But with the deterioration in activity broadening from the industrial sector into services, the likelihood that the economy will fall into recession in the second half is increasing. The sharp deterioration in growth data has persuaded analysts to revise their outlook for interest rates hikes by the European Central Bank, ECB, which is now expected to end its tightening cycle and leave rates on hold at the September meeting. The August Purchasing Managers Index PMI for the Eurozone has fallen to its lowest level in 3 years. Within the EU, Germany's economy stands out as particularly hard hit among European nations. The downturn is not limited to a specific sector. The decline in activity is spreading from the industrial realm to the services sector, says Oxford Economics. Europe is suffering from the impact of a polycrisis that started with the pandemic in 2020 and was followed by the crisis in Eastern Europe and the boomerang effects of sanctions on Russia that has sent energy prices through the roof and fueled the strong and persistent inflation that has crushed growth. While Europe's gas storage tanks are over 90% full well before the mandatory deadline in November, that doesn't guarantee supplies of gas in Europe will be sufficient to get through the heating season without prices rising again, as Russia's exports of gas that provide the base supply have fallen from 150 BCM a year to 25 BCM expected this year. In 2022, the shortfall was made by record imports of LNG up from 80 BCM in 2021 to 130 BCM in 2022, but supplies of LNG are limited and Europe has to compete with Asia. So much depends on both the weather and China's economic performance. In the meantime, gas prices have already risen from $350 per 1,000 cubic meters in July to over $500 in August, as traders begin to anticipate a shortfall. While prices have fallen from records set last year that were 10 times higher than normal, they remain 2 to 3 times higher than the long-term average prices, and that has led to a steady deindustrialization in Europe, where energy-intensive and gas-reliant industry closed down as they are no longer economically viable, which is contributing to the slowdown. The ECB is likely to try and support growth by holding rates steady at its next meeting. Oxford Economics said in a note, while the upcoming decision by the European Central Bank ECB at their September meeting remains uncertain, the balance between growth and inflation risks has changed enough for us to predict a pause in the ECB's hiking cycle. Interestingly, the PMI figures contrast with some sentiment data released earlier, such as the ZEW and Sentix indices. While these indices hinted at improvement, but Oxford Economics expressed caution until corroborating data emerged. Oxford Economics said, "Regrettably, the disappointing PMI figures have confirmed our skepticism." Further underscoring the gloom, consumer confidence data released later in the week reflects a pessimistic sentiment despite record employment figures. The August PMI report provides little to inspire optimism, with price measures showing signs of reacceleration even as activity falters. Notably, the weakening trend isn't confined to manufacturing, but has extended its reach into the services sector, which had been bolstering growth in recent quarters. Adding, a significant drop in the services sector would almost certainly lead to GDP contraction. Our current projections anticipate a modest 0.1% expansion for the Eurozone economy in both the third quarter and the fourth quarter, but these numbers are likely to be revised downward in our upcoming update.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we try to answer your queries, your issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. And the answers are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified family. Well, today we have the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, Professor, in our previous episode, you talked about the methods of character development, and you said that everything that we want to teach to our children should be based on the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt, which are the two most precious things left behind by Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And now, since Quran and Ahlul Bayt are the most important sources for our knowledge. We have gone for a session with you about the importance of teaching Quran to our children. Now I would want to ask you, how can parents use some of the methods or approaches for instilling a deep love and reverence for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's very important to understand that everything which is good emanates from Allah Almighty. And the source and the after the Allah Almighty, the source of all goodness is the Ahlul Bayt. Everything which we can think of about virtues in mankind, the utmost level is to be found in the Ahlul Bayt. So whenever we talk about goodness, as we when we recite Ziyarat-e-Jami'ah,
right,
it's a very beautiful presentation of the virtues of the Ahlul Bayt. When there's any, the Ziyarat-e-Jami'ah teaches that if there's any talk of goodness, of anything good, anything of a virtue, of felicity, the source, the fountainhead, is the Ahlul Bayt, the Imams.
Right.
So whether we're talking about anything of virtue, of goodness in this world, they are the source. Through them we achieve whatever we can.
Right.
When we talk about the Ahlul Bayt, when we talk about the awaited Imam, our children must know that when we, for example, in the Laylatul Qadr, we say the angels descend down to the earth. Upon whom do they descend? There should be a platform. There should be some place which is capable and has the capacity to receive the angels.
Right.
And that is the Imam.
Imam of our time.
So he should be the focus of all our attentions. If we talk about, unfortunately, our children, ourselves, we are much influenced and impressed by this advancement of science and technology. Science and technology has to be, even if we achieve anything, anything is achieved is through their grace and their providence. And it should be for the sake of their goals. It should be in their service of the Imam. Everything we achieve in the field of science and technology, everything, whether it's science, whether it is human sciences, natural sciences, the technology, everything should be focused on that central theme. That is important. If we want to really imbibe our children with the philosophy and the love of the Ahlul Bayt, the mission they have, then we should... anything that is happening which is good in this world is because of the Ahlul Bayt.
Right.
They are the source of our goodness. They are the channel through which Allah Almighty gives that mercy to us. The Holy Prophet is Rahmatan lil Alameen. Just as Allah Almighty is Rabbul Alameen, the Holy Prophet and his holy progeny, they are the channel for all goodness. So we should realize that whatever is good in this universe, it is because of them. So we need to glorify them, we need to praise them as the manifestations of Allah Almighty's
right.
Names and his all the goodness that is possible
right.
in the material world is because of them.
We'll discuss more with you, Professor, on that topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're exploring how we can instill the deep love and reverence for Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam in our children. Yes, Professor.
So today, in this world, the world which we are faced with, this movement of resistance, the global movement of resistance.
Right.
Which we can see, for example, in the movement of Arba'een.
Yeah.
The Arba'een is becoming a part of that, the manifestation of that global movement.
Right.
Or other events that take place. The focal theme is the imamat of the ummah. That has to be made the theme upon which all our activities